Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
How are you doing today, Miss Amy?
I'm doing great. I'm excited about our show today because, you know, there are certain subject matters I really get excited about, and there are other subject matters that I'm probably less excited about, right, but I need to learn about. That's one of the shows today.
It's food?
No, it's not. No food? Finance.
Finance.
Yeah.
I prefer the food.
Yeah, no doubt. But I've got a feeling that they're going to get me excited about learning more about all kinds of fun things. CDs, commodities.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, there are certain subjects that aren't so sexy, as they say. Stone Payton always says certain things are sexy, like
yes,
IT sexy. And I'm
for
like,
him.
Yeah. We'll see if these two guys can make finance sexy to us today.
The pressure's on them.
Yeah, because it is. It's one of those subjects that actually puts me to sleep sometimes, but it's something everybody needs to know about, and oftentimes you don't know what you don't know. You don't know how to save if you don't know the products. Our first guest this morning, welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Nathan. You got to pronounce your last name.
Rizzo.
Rizzo. And it
just
starts
like
with an
spelled.
H, but it starts with an H. I was thinking it's Harisso. Maybe there was an accent with it.
Yeah.
Welcome, Nathan.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us what Lanier Financial Group does and how you help your clients.
Well, Lanier Financial Group, we started just over a year ago. We're a group of advisors. We're stuck in the corporate environment and really saw some things we didn't enjoy. So we decided to go out on the independent side and make sure that our number one priority is servicing our clients. We focus on working with individuals as well as business owners and businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So our market's pretty strong here in the Atlanta area.
So you go after like owners of small business or business in general?
Yeah, owners of small businesses. We like to keep our clients small groups just like our firm.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And what are some of the needs that the group has?
Well, generally on the business side, they have a lot of employee benefits packages, and that's kind of where we come in. But a lot of business owners don't take into consideration how their benefits affect their everyday lives. So we come in with the expertise of not only knowing the benefits packages that we can implement, but also how that will affect and how we can help out business owners as individuals and families.
Interesting. Do a lot of people do that? I mean, that's a space that usually someone's one or the other. They're either on finance or on benefits. How do you blend the two?
You know, it is kind of difficult. You need to make sure that you have people in well-defined roles. So whereas we might have one person at our firm that will go in and take care of the benefits packages because that's their specialty niche, we can also bring a round table of experts, so portfolio managers, insurance specialists, and then our benefits experts in order to make sure that we can bring a complete plan to these business owners.
What's a common thing that a business owner isn't doing correct that you see?
I would say the number one thing that I see with business owners is they see all this cash flow coming in. You know, obviously it's a long process of getting a business up and running and being profitable. But once you become profitable, they like to invest or reinvest every single dollar back into the company. And then next thing you know, they're 10 years down the road, age 45, 50, and they don't have any personal savings. Everything's dumped into their business. And if you don't organize yourself correctly, if your firm gets sued, you know, you could lose your complete net worth, whereas you need to make sure you're protected in ways of forming your business and making sure that you're taking a regular income or at least putting money aside for those future retirement goals.
I know one of the buzzwords I've heard lately in that industry is alternative fixed income products. What is that?
Well, there's many fixed income products. When people think of fixed income, they're thinking of the bonds, the CDs, a fixed annuity, things of that nature. With the fixed index, it just allows you, for example, a fixed index annuity would be a good kind of parallel. It allows you to take part in some of those market gains that are out there and available without having any of the downturns of a negative market year. For the last couple of years, the market has not been performing extremely well, and people have been losing a lot of money. Well, this is a good place where you can look into the fixed indexed arena to be able to take part in those market gains without having those downturns.
Now, how would that differ from like a CD or things that we're more familiar with?
Well, the main difference between the CDs and the fixed index products would be the taxation. Every year, if you have a $100,000 CD, you're going to get taxed on the interest when you get your 1099s, okay? And what people don't take into consideration is not only are you being taxed, but if you take in part inflation, you're probably going to be losing buying power, whereas any type of deferred product is preferable to a annually taxed product for the benefit of you're not paying taxes every single year. You're going to let your gains keep rolling over year after year to the point where you're earning interest on what you would be paying as taxes instead of paying taxes on your interest.
And what type of person would benefit from that? You mentioned, you know, the business owner and putting so much money into your business. I mean, who would really benefit from that?
Well, on the fixed index side, you know, you really need to take into consideration the client's age. Mm-hmm. The number one thing with deferred products, whether it be deferred retirement plans or deferred fixed index annuities, would be the age 59 and a half rule. So if anybody needs to withdraw their money before that time or that age, they are going to be taxed at ordinary income plus that additional 10% penalty. So it really, you need to take into consideration your age and the investment time frame that you have. I probably wouldn't recommend anything like this to a person that's under the age of 50 that does not have a long time frame or investment time horizon for their needs of this portion of their portfolio.
Now, is this something that you have to be at a certain wealth?
No, not at all. You know, anybody can get into any type of fixed income product, whether it be CDs, bonds, annuities. There's no income stipulations.
And what about Roth IRAs? I mean, we've heard a lot about that in the past. Can you give us any kind of update on that? Roth conversions, maybe?
Yeah. Recently, the government made some changes to where anybody now can roll a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. There used to be income limitations to this. And part of the reason why the government took away this is, well, they can generate some good tax revenue now rather than waiting for all these baby boomers that we have to retire and start taking their cut of their investments and their retirement money. So that would be the main difference.
So what would a consumer consider when looking at a Roth conversion?
Well, again, they need to take into consideration what is their current tax bracket. Mm-hmm. And are they planning on being in the same tax bracket or higher when they reach retirement? Most people think when they get to the retirement age that their taxes are going to pretty much go away. Well, many surveys have found that people spend just the same or more than what they spend in their working years. You need to take into consideration those. What do you plan to do on a daily basis? It's not cheap to go play golf every day, but I know a lot of retired folks that do that. It's a lot cheaper to go to work from 9 to 5 and only have to feed a family of four than it is to live a luxurious lifestyle for, you know, age 65 till, you know, hopefully 90 plus.
Yeah, people are definitely living longer. What are some of the other changes that you've seen recently that we need to be up to date on?
Well, I think the main change is with this Roth conversion in my particular financial services sector. A lot of people are taking advantage of this now, especially the younger professionals. For all the younger professionals out there that have moved jobs multiple times, they're rolling their 401ks from previous employers into IRAs. They should really look at the benefit of paying the taxes now on those retirement accounts, so that way at retirement they'll be able to have that tax-free income, which is, again, the main difference between a Roth and a traditional is that tax-free income at retirement. Everyone likes to have tax-free money.
Now, so you think that's a no-brainer that everybody should switch?
Not necessarily. Again, it's a, you know, it's a really a case-by-case basis. You should definitely consult your financial advisor, or if you would like to call in and speak with me, I'd be more than willing to help you out there.
What's a scenario you wouldn't switch?
There's a lot of folks right now that are maybe in the 25% federal tax bracket. And when they retire, they are not going to lower their tax liability. We all know that, you know, in the 80s we had some outrageous tax brackets, you know, people paying 70%+.
Right.
Well, right now we're at the historical low for taxes, So the only place that they really can go is up. We already know that next year the tax rates are going to go up. We know the following year the tax rates are going to go up. So it's just you have to take – that's the number one consideration right now. And if you're in that 25% tax bracket moving forward at retirement, you're probably still going to be in that 25% tax bracket, probably even higher if you plan on living a lifestyle of I guess you could call it luxury, or just, you know, doing what you like and not having to worry about money. And of course, that's what most people do in their early years of retirement. They take those early trips. You don't see too many retirees that are saying, I want to go to Italy, but I want to wait till I'm 90. You know, they want to do that when they're first couple years in retirement.
The good life, right?
Yeah, every day, right?
That's right. What are some of the other things I need to do to prepare for the good life? I mean, do you walk your clients through a scenario of needs? I mean, how do you work with them?
Yeah, well, our typical process starts with when we meet a client, we like to hear what their long-term, short-term, and intermediate goals are. And a lot of times, people don't know. You know, they have ideas, but they don't really know what they want to do. So our first couple meetings is basically just jogging the memory and trying to get their brain fired up so that way they can think about what they truly want out of life. Most people think in the now. They're not thinking 20 years, 15 years down the road, but that's what we challenge our clients to do. And once they figure what their goals may be, then we develop a customized financial plan for them that will help them reach those goals in a timely manner using forecasting of past market returns for the investment side. And then we also do some fixed income planning so that way we can guarantee a portion of their retirement. And then, of course, every year people change, so are their goals. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of keeping up with that on at least an annual basis to make sure that you're currently on track for what your long-term goals are.
Well, what percentage of the people you run across have a plan before you get involved?
Very few. A lot of people.
Like 10%?
I would say 10% is probably a good guess.
Wow. So 9 out of 10 people just are living day to day and have no idea what they're going to do when they retire, when they'll retire, how much money they need for retirement.
They have ideas, but when you put them on paper, they don't really look so good. And what we run into a lot is people working with other advisors that they think that they have a true financial plan, and in reality, they have either a stockbroker or they have an insurance agent. Then they have products that are kind of just thrown into a bag and, you know, well, let's hope this works out when we get to retirement. Everything needs to be coordinated well. You know, you need to speak, if you have an attorney, you need to speak with your attorneys. You need to speak with your tax professionals, your financial advisors. You need to pull all your resources together to make sure that you're on track for what you really want to do.
And how often would a client meet with you?
Every day. It's a very volatile market.
Yes. The everyday phone calls from clients do get exhausting, but we are available. No, you know, in this market, we like to meet with our clients at least every 6 months and talk with them at least on a monthly basis. You just need to keep that relationship fresh. They need to know what's going on, especially in their investment accounts. You know, with the volatile market, everyone gets concerned when they see a, you know, a 2% down day or right. a 2% up day. They call, you know, well, what's my portfolio looking like today? Well, you know, although that is something that's, you know, over the long term is not good for your mental health, I'm assuming. I think at least on a twice a year basis,
you should make some adjustments, yeah. Like twice a year. About
yeah,
for most people,
or at least make sure your goals are still the same. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things can happen in life that change your goals.
Right,
having a child, having to move, you know, buying that second home. There's a lot of obstacles out there that people don't really think about the pros and cons before they act. Unfortunately, but that's kind of what I'm here to do.
Terrific. And how can people reach you if they've been listening and they think, oh my goodness, I've got to get my life in order?
If you're one of the 90% of the people that don't have a clue of what your life's going to be like in 5, 10, 20 years.
That's right. But you want to enjoy the good life. How can people reach you?
You can reach me directly at the office at 404-669-6792. That's 404-669-6792. Or you can email the firm directly at info@Lanier, LANIER, financialgroup.com. linearfinancialgroup.com. That's all one word.
And what's the website?
It's linearfinancialgroup.com, just like Lake Lanier.
Great.
Perfect. Thanks so much for being with us today, Nathan.
Thanks for having me.
I like it when people talk in layman's terms. Yeah. I actually understood that.
That's a bonus, right?
It is a bonus for me. And I'm sure our listeners enjoyed it, too. A lot of valuable information. Our next guest this morning, Jim Llewellyn from World Commodity Fund. Welcome.
Good morning.
So maybe we should start with the name, World Commodity Fund. What really is a commodity?
Well, there are a lot of things that could be. I guess milk would be a commodity. There's many
coffee.
Commodities.
We're all aware of coffee.
We try and focus on the ones that we can invest in, and that's 37. We've got 37 that we follow that are traded globally that are big enough to invest in. So.
Give us an example.
What about eggs? Are eggs a commodity?
Eggs used to be an investable commodity, and they were too volatile, so that didn't work.
Tulips. I heard tulips were popular
tulips.
One time.
Also very volatile. Didn't last long. So today there are 37, and maybe some of these won't last, the next 10 years as well.
The Azuki bean.
The Azuki bean may be the first to go.
You think?
Because they can't spell it too well, outside of Japan. It's also the smallest contract that we track is the Azuki bean. It's a little red bean they use for sweets.
But that's a commodity that you're talking about,
well,
right?
Sure. In Asia, they love it. You can't get something sweet tea without a red Azuki bean in it, practically.
Wow.
You better learn to love them if you go to Hong Kong.
I see on the list lumber. I mean, these are...
They're commodities.
They are, but I'm glad I asked because I had no idea. I was thinking oil, gas, I was thinking of...
Well, we break it into three groups. There's metals, there's agriculture, and there's energy. And, we really focus on all three, but we may, from time to time, we may be all in metals or all in energy or all in agriculture, but we're looking at all three groups day to day, all the time.
What's the advantage of investing in commodities rather than stocks?
For the last 10 years, money. You make more money investing in commodities. That's one of the main advantages.
That's a good benefit.
Definitely like
so
that.
The index that we track at the fund, World Commodity Fund is the fund that we manage, and we follow an index called the Rogers International Commodity Index, which was started in summer 98. And so in the last 12 years, that index has given us about 10% a year. So I don't know what that comes out to. Yeah, I do, actually. It's triple.
You better.
It's triple. We started that at 1,000. It's at 3,212 today.
Wow.
So that's a triple in 12 years with no games, no leverage, no options, nothing. You're just putting cash in commodities and letting it sit there, basically, and wait for the Chinese to call you.
That's where all the money is?
The Chinese are buying about half of every commodity there is.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, there's an awful lot of them there, and they're getting richer. And apparently, the richer you get, the more sugar you eat, the more coffee you drink, the more orange juice you drink.
And there's a lot of them.
And they don't really. The interesting about speaking about coffee and orange juice in particular is very interesting because in China, they really traditionally have not used those products. And so you're going to see a huge shift, I guess, in demand in those two, particularly orange and coffee.
Yeah, once they've figure out that mango orange juice.
Well, Starbucks
came over.
Yes, when Starbucks starts shoving coffee at them, I think they already are.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big change in commodities, and one of the reasons that commodities have done better than stocks.
So you're bullish.
I've been bullish for 12 years, and I think I'm going to be bullish for another 10, I think.
Really?
So talk me into it. Keep going. I mean, if I have money to invest, should I diversify my portfolio?
All in commodities.
That's what I did. I quit my job and I quit my job and learned how to trade commodities in 95. I think you should just drop everything.
That's tempting. Look at how well it's working for him.
That would be one approach. The other way would be to buy our fund, World Commodity Fund.
Let him do all the heavy lifting.
Right. WCOMX is the symbol. It's a U.S. registered mutual fund. The SEC regulates us. It's easy to find. You can buy it at Scott Trade or E-Trade, or you can call us directly.
Go to your house and pick up some shares?
And unlike Nathan, you can call me every day. As long as you bring a check. Just call me every day. I don't care.
So who's monitoring all this? I mean, obviously...
Jim, right now. You see him on this BlackBerry?
Yeah. Jim's keeping up to date on this.
The index sort of runs itself. I manage a portfolio of equities. What we do is we let the index tell us which commodities are doing poorly and which are doing well, and then we try and find stocks or companies that are in the areas that are doing poorly. So what I do is I manage a portfolio of natural resource equities. For example, our largest holding is iron ore, and iron ore had not been doing well a year ago. So we have a quarter of the fund in iron ore. And so it turns out there's a company in Cleveland that has a 50% market share in iron ore in North America, Cleveland Cliffs. So that's kind of what I do. I'm monitoring that. I'm looking for companies that have unique situations that are in the commodity arena but maybe having a tough time. We're always looking for value. We're not going to be buying probably the highest flyers. We're looking for things that are not doing well because our thesis is commodities are going higher anyway. So we want to be invested in the ones that are doing poorly because we're pretty confident that they'll catch up. Eventually.
They'll catch back up. I'm looking at the list, and I'm sorry, that's why I got the giggles over here. A commodity is lean hogs.
Yeah, lean hogs. Not
and
the fat,
greasy
fat
wool.
Fat hogs are not here. Because of the Obama initiative of wellness? Is that what that's about?
No more fat hogs. But I got to know, greasy wool.
I don't know why they call it greasy wool. That's an excellent question. It's in Australia. So far, I haven't had a chance to ask them why they call it greasy wool. But it's wool. It's still wool.
So, meanwhile, we're having this conversation with Nathan, and you're over on your BlackBerry monitoring the greasy wool.
Well, they're closed. So it's really easy to monitor. But, yeah, I don't know what to say. Greasy wool. It all comes from New Zealand and Australia. And the Chinese are buying half of that as well.
That's just a rule of thumb, it seems.
Yeah,
just buying half of everything.
Yeah, it's a lot easier than looking everything up.
Right.
Is there a certain type of investor, though? Is it a mindset? I mean, do you tend to be more of a risk taker if you invest in commodities? I mean, walk us through the mental mindset of someone you work with. Do you have to do some convincing, or most of your clients, are they already aware
are they just
of the lean hog?
Trading Places fans from the Eddie Murphy movie, because I think that was all about commodities.
Right, orange juice. That was orange juice. I would say commodities draws the gambler. You know, there's a lot of gamblers in the commodity arena, but I would say most of them clear are not interested in our fund very much, or this index really, because the index is it's static, it doesn't change. We can't really gamble on it.
But with your fund, we're not investing in the index. The index is just a guide to let you know where the stocks are that are kind of support those commodities.
Both of the index and my fund would not be very attractive to the average commodity speculator. But our fund, we draw a person that is worried about inflation, and we're really, really the fund is for anybody that wants to make money, in my opinion. But in general, the people that are drawn to us at the moment are fans of Jim Rogers, who created this index and follow his various comments. And in general, we get a lot of people that are just worried about inflation for all types of reasons. I had a lady call me last week. A client, she wanted to buy some more of the fund, and she had gone to the grocery store. She had bought some pine nuts, and she's in Oregon. She bought some pine nuts, she says, and I don't know, the bag was $35. It used to be $5, and it sort of hit her that, hey, maybe I should put some more into this fund because I think agriculture is, I guess she lives on a farm. She must follow, so I don't know. But so we draw a lot of types. So that's a housewife that's worried about pine nuts, also interested in our fund.
Yeah, what's up with the inflation on saffron? I mean, that's one that I recently went to buy for a recipe. And
oh, you did?
Yeah, so that resonates with me.
That's
I was
not
like,
one of the commodities.
It's not on my list, Amy, but I'm pretty sure the Chinese are buying
half of them.
Half
that's
of them.
What I heard. There's a rumor.
There may be a drought in India. I have no idea. But that's, I would say, if you made me put money on, I would put money on saffron. They're all going to do well. Whether they're on this list or not, they're all going to do well, I think.
Interesting. And now, to speak a little bit about natural gas. I mean, not...
Natural gas?
I really got
trouble.
The giggles. No, I mean, we hear a lot about that as a commodity. I mean, our resources are going away in so many ways. And it looks like the Rogers Index does approach that. Is that something that people will invest in World Fund just because of the natural gas component?
Yeah, I hope so. Because our last letter, we mentioned that we're going to have a very large exposure to natural gas. So 25% or more we're at the moment. And we want to grow that because it's one of the worst performing commodities in the index,
Why
since the index was created, really. You know, they've found a lot of natural gas in Texas and Pennsylvania and all across the eastern coast. So there's a feeling that there will be an infinite supply of gas, and gas is like, I think, $3.70 or something like that. I think it went as high as $12 or $14 and came back down to $3. Historically, before we created this index, it was $2. So it's still up. It's still doubled in the last 10 years, but there's a feeling that there's a tremendous oversupply of gas. Now, I feel that that's overstated, that the U.S. government will probably restrict fracking, these techniques that they use to get out of the ground. They're going to say, in Pennsylvania, we don't want our water poisoned. So there's going to be a lot of things that prevent that gas from getting produced here. So we're buying it in Canada. We're buying natural gas producers in Canada because we want to avoid a lot of the regulatory risk that you have here. No matter who's in charge, I think the U.S. will bring you more regulations, like we had the freeze and drilling in the Gulf, and there's going to be a lot more of that I see going forward. So we would prefer to have natural gas exposure in Canada, and our largest holding there is a Birchcliff Energy, which is run by a very hardworking entrepreneur on his second go-around. He's already created one success.
So now, when you're finding these companies to invest in, how deep do you dive into that company? Like you just mentioned, like you know about right. the owner. Like, I don't know if you're kidding around, well, but it seemed like you really knew about, like you checked them out to that level.
Oh, sure, absolutely. First thing I do is find out if they went to University of Georgia,
and then you
usually know.
So then you don't.
No, I do. It depends on the size of the company. For a big company like Cleveland Cliffs, I can focus more on the macro situation. But on a smaller company like Birchcliff, and we own companies that are much smaller than Birchcliff, you do have to read every thing that comes out
are
of the company.
Are you going there to the company and shaking hands with the owner?
Sure, Toronto. We went to Toronto to see Franco-Nevada is our favorite gold mining company. Franco-Nevada is run by another, probably the best mining company operator in the world, Pierre Lassonde. So we went to Toronto to talk to Pierre and meet him and get a feel for whether he's lost his touch or not. You know, maybe he has palsy or something. I have no idea. You never know. People, but no, he's on his game. So, you know, yes, where possible, we do want to meet the people.
And that's why when someone's investing in this fund, that's the kind of service they're getting. It's not like some guy's just reading the Wall Street Journal and going, hey, this looks good because, you know, this reporter says it does.
Well, this is not one of 100 products that we sell. This is the only product that it's sort of a passion. It's a business, but it's more of a passion, really. I wasn't kidding with Amy. I quit my job in Taiwan in 95 to get into the commodity business. Went to Merrill Lynch, learned how to trade commodities at Merrill Lynch here in Atlanta, and then with the idea of creating a fund at some point. And so this is really all I do. So yeah, I would say there's a fair amount of passion involved, and you get that when you buy a world commodity.
Jim, will you take me with you when you go to check out the cocoa, coffee, and lean hogs?
Africa.
Because
you want to go to Africa?
I love bacon, love chocolate, and I'm a big coffee drinker. So when you go to check those out, you need to make sure you take me with you.
You'll like coffee. The coffee would be Brazil. Rio. Mm.
There you go.
Wow. So do you travel a lot for work currently?
At the moment, no, but, you know, I used to go to Africa and check out little companies, and when I was younger. Now I have a three-year-old, excuse me.
Yeah, the travel is limited now.
Yeah, I can't just, I have to plan these things now.
It makes more sense to me now, though, Lee. I had no idea when I was originally looking at the information. I'm like, World Commodity Fund, but it makes sense, taking kind of the best resources from the whole world.
And then you go after the undervalued ones.
Exactly. Interesting.
Thank you.
It sounds so simple.
He does make it sound simple. And you know what? I think it kind of sounded a little sexy other than the greasy wool and the lean hogs.
I've got a new view of this list.
There you go.
Well, it's a good list, though, because it does make you look at it in the silos.
Where's coal?
Coal is not on here, is it? One reason we like Cleveland Cliffs is it's one of the largest coal producers in Australia.
It's not on this
it's
list.
It's not
though.
On the list. I don't think the
is
contract.
Brent coal?
Sorry?
Does Brent mean coal? What's Brent?
Brent crude is the
crude.
Crude oil. You're right. There is no coal in here. I think because most of it's sold directly to the power companies, so they don't feel the need to create. That's something that might happen. You might see a coal contract.
A 38th commodity on this list?
We started with 36. We have 37 now.
Are there fee funds? I know that's kind of a...
Yeah, it's free. Gym's a giver, I can tell.
You'll never notice the fee. It's painless. It's painless.
Is it transparent? I'm curious because everybody works differently, and this model is something I'm not as familiar with. So is it built in, or how does that work?
One thing I like about the mutual fund structure is it's very cheap to participate. It's 1.5%, or 1.6% is what you pay per annum. So you pay 1.6, per year. That's the management fee and expenses all in. So, in our world, that's pretty inexpensive. There are cheaper mutual funds. I think the index funds are under 1%, but you don't get me,
that's
an index
a bonus.
Fund, right?
And it's 3-year-old.
So it's 1.6%, which is about average for the mutual funds.
Is this something an individual can go directly to you, or they have to go through a broker?
We have it both ways. 50% of our clients come from brokers, E-Trade and Scottrade, and hopefully some others, RBC. Wherever you are, if you have a broker that doesn't have the fund, we can get it at that brokerage firm. And the other 50% call us directly and have an account in Ohio where the accounting is done. So they get a quarterly statement from us. Mm-hmm. It's easy.
But yep. Is there going to be a lot of transactions? Like, what are the tax ramifications in commodities?
We're very tax efficient. I think Reuters ranked us number one for tax efficiency because I don't feel the need to trade very often.
Right.
I think this year we've made 10 trades. It's August. That's pretty good.
You got a lot of free time.
I do most of it. I just read a lot. I try and make it so that we get it right the first time and we don't have
there
to do a
you
lot
go.
Of trade.
That's how to do it.
I gotta know though, you've got a BlackBerry. I mean, how iPhone?
Just for the clock, Amy.
Yeah.
Just for the clock. But yeah. I mean, really, how do you keep up with all this the time?
He's making trades.
How do I keep it? Well, we had Bloomberg service is something we use to track all these things. You get 24-hour news. I don't know. I'm reading. I don't know how to answer that. That's a good question.
Go to the grocery store.
I read.
Talks to the shoppers.
I do the old-fashioned way. Yeah, I read. They mail me stuff. I call them. They send it to me. I read it. It's pretty boring.
There's
it's
only 37 exciting. Of them to keep up with. It's not like there's a million.
Well, the Ricky, you can follow the Ricky on our website. We track the index if you want to see what it's doing on
and
our website.
And what's the Ricky?
The Rogers International Commodity Index.
Ricky.
I'm learning all kinds of things
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
When I said I know nothing about finance, yeah.
The Ricky.
It wasn't a bluff.
No. So you follow the Ricky and you... I mean, do you look at it daily? Do these things go up and down?
I have to say, this year we've got more ideas than we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really tracking the market so much as reading. Really, mm-hmm. read. Well, I'll give you an example. Right now, we're probably going to open a big position in refineries. So the refinery industry is on the verge of bankruptcy. So
that's good. That's a buying opportunity.
Right,
bankruptcy.
Because we know they're not going to go bankrupt because Google can't put – they can't sell gasoline, I don't think. Nathan, can Google sell gasoline? I'm not so sure.
Soon.
So we know there's going to be gasoline, I think.
And yes.
So I think now that we've established that, we're going to have refineries. So I just have to figure out which of the six or all. We need to decide whether we're going to buy all six that are in the United States or just one. And so basically that involves me sitting down and reading – all this stuff that comes out of these companies, financial statements.
And so which one's going to make it?
I think it's going to be WNR, Western.
But we won't hold you to that.
What's that?
We're not going to hold you to that.
No.
That's just right now based on what you know.
Well, WNR, we have a position in WNR at the moment, and we're looking at a refinery in Europe, which is run by Thomas O'Malley, who created Valero here in the States and now is in Europe and created another refinery there. And he's gone from 120 to 10. That stock has gone from 120 to 10.
So that's bad.
90? Is that 90%? It's a lot. It's a lot. It's very
not
badly.
Good. Not good, unless you shorted him. Did you short him?
So we wait until about 90%, and then we start reading a lot.
Now you're like, there's a buying opportunity here. I'm getting this at a discount.
Right. So we'll probably... but that involves reading, really. It's not very
sexy. You're like an outlet store.
Like an outlet store.
You wait for the main brand goes down.
We prefer a membership warehouse.
There you go.
Costco.
He's the Costco of brokers.
So if people are listening and want to know how to reach Jim, he's a fun guy. I mean,
just for that. That's worth the 1.6% just for that.
People did call me, and they can call me Nathan. Nathan, you should rethink your – you should have them just call you all the time.
That's right. So, Jim, if people want to just be calling you daily.
Yeah.
What's your home number?
I mean, my kid was in Piedmont Hospital, and I had the people – I was on my phone, you know. People didn't like that. My wife didn't like that.
Well,
but you were checking out probably medical commodities,
right?
You were sitting there thinking, "Gosh, but they've gone through a lot of paper.
A lot of palladium here."
If they want to call me, they can call me at 404-437-7420. 404.
And your website for your fund?
World Commodity Funds with an S .com. The commodity is two M's.
Two M's, and it's plural. You don't want to go to the fun.
Or you could just type in our symbol. You can Google our symbol, WCOMX.
It's a symbol.
I have a ticker symbol, WCOMX. You can always type that in and find us.
Very rarely do we have someone on the show that actually has a ticker.
I know. I think you might be the first with your own ticker.
That's right. And I am going to remove
that. That is sexy.
That's so that sexy. And you know what else I'm going to do? What? I'm going to remove the D, and it's World Commodity Fun.
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
You better buy that URL quick. It's a marketing move.
Oh, no doubt. Jim, any final thoughts for our listeners this morning?
Final thoughts? I don't know. Run out and Google WCOMX and call 404-437-7420. What else?
Get in there.
What else is there to do? I don't know.
It's a good buying opportunity.
And it's a great opportunity.
Today is a great opportunity. For Roth IRA conversions, I agree with Nathan 100% on that.
So you think you should convert?
I think everyone should convert some Roths in the next 3 months. Absolutely, without a doubt. And then, of course,
put it all in.
WCOMX, just like me.
Go long.
Yes.
Terrific. Thanks so much for sharing with us. It has been a whole lot of fun talking about the fund. And
I learned a lot.
I did, too. Thanks. Thanks for being with us this morning, y'all. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Have a wonderful week. We'll be right back.